Welcome to the 9-8 podcast. My name is David Ellis.
And my name is Alex Hogg.
This week on the 9-8 podcast, we are taking aim at the unpopular lockout laws and discussing their effect on the Sydney music scene.
And we're discussing the shutdown of venues across capital cities due to them being too loud. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome back to the 9-8 podcast. This is episode 5. Are we up to episode 5?
Yeah, episode 5.
Episode 5. Wow, how time flies when you're having fun.
Absolutely.
And as we mentioned in the little intro there, this is the week we are going to dive right into talking about something we've danced around a little bit over the last couple of weeks, and that is these lockout laws, which we have in Sydney and in a couple of capital cities across Australia.
Yeah, this is a very, very controversial topic amongst music fans in Australia, because these lockout laws, as we'll get into discussing, have essentially destroyed underground and progressive music in Sydney.
And not just progressive music either. It says they've single-handedly dismantled pretty well all nightlife in Australia. Not in Australia, but in Sydney, over the last however long it is that they've been enacted, which is it puts us as a laughing stock of the rest of the world, really. But before we get into that, as always, I think we need to start with a little bit of follow-up from last week.
Yes, last week we spoke about social media and the impact that that has on musicians. And the one thing that we didn't even get to talk about was Twitter.
Yeah, yeah, the cesspool that it can be at times.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was Stephen Fry who called it, what do you call it, a stalking ground for the sanctimoniously self-righteous. So I don't think anyone else could potentially put it that way and make it sound so
good. I have heard it described before as well as a Nazi-riddled microblogging platform, which probably nails our colours to the mast on what we potentially think about Twitter. I personally don't have a personal Twitter account. Obviously, I use one for this podcast. What about you, Dave? Do you have a Twitter account?
I do. Being a journo, it is something that we have. You've got to be so connected to the list of the world. And you know what? It does have quite a few positive aspects to it. Most notably, with the sharing of these events, you know, there was obviously the whole kerfuffle when the US went and shot Osama bin Laden, killed Osama bin Laden, where a guy actually tweeted that there were Black Hawk helicopters hanging around his house and didn't quite understand why. And that was before they shut the signals of the networks down. So, you know, very powerful tool in both the right and the wrong hands, that sort of stuff. But it also sort of opens the door to a lot of, you're basically giving idiots a microphone, which is never a good thing.
Yeah, and never more so than now. I mean, now it's being used as a, I don't want to turn this into let's all bash on Donald Trump, but it has been used as a big platform to talk about all sorts of things on the world stage at political levels as well.
Absolutely. I mean, Kafifi, right?
Kafifi, however you want to pronounce that damn word.
Or sad, or wrong.
Bigly.
He seems like, I mean, we thought we had a problem with Tony Abbott and his three-word slogans. This guy's just gone, you know, just down to one. Yeah. So I think he's just extremely efficient, or, you know, he's just worrying about his 160 character limit. Actually, it's not 160 anymore, is it? It's 250 now, isn't it?
320. They changed it.
Wow. 320 is what
they changed it. Only for certain users. I think you have to be at a certain level before I think you have to be like a verified user or something.
All right. Okay. So you've got to give me your email and the rights to your firstborn or something. It seems to be the case.
I think you have to also have a certain amount of followers as well. And despite, you know, people violating the terms of service numerous times, not mentioning any names, of course, Donald Trump, they get to stay.
Yeah, it's I mean, there's a few others as well. There was that guy PewDiePie, who's a gamer, live streamer, a
gamer, and number one YouTuber, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
The number one YouTuber,
and he had a lot of troubles with Twitter and YouTube and Facebook and all that due to some racial slurs I think he threw around. Yeah. Which I think maybe that just really speaks to how people get after they've had their they become, you know. After they become reasonably famous, maybe it just gets to their head.
No, I think it's just about driving traffic. I mean, it got everybody talking about it, even though people who don't necessarily follow PewDiePie or know who he is, they're all talking about him. Mm. So I think it was just a straight up, you know, drive traffic, feed the machine, get those clicks sort of thing happening.
Mm. Yeah, he even got a South Park episode, almost an entire season, actually, based on PewDiePie.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. All based around his concept of playing video games and commentating over the top of it, and obviously started his movement with that.
Yep.
And the other thing I suppose we didn't touch on as well was something that I did want to talk about last week, was the death of Phil Emmanuel.
Yes. Everybody, or at least most people here in Australia, are probably very familiar with Tommy Emmanuel.
Yes.
But Phil Emmanuel...
Probably a lot of people in the prog community as well. I mean, Tommy Emmanuel is a weapon of a guitarist.
Absolutely. However, Phil also was also an incredibly talented guitar player and did a lot of things for music in this country.
Absolutely did.
And died very suddenly.
Yeah, he had an asthma attack.
Yeah.
Which was, as someone who has asthma himself, luckily only allergic asthma, so it's only when there's allergies around, it's like you know, when there's smoke like there is today, it really makes you think about, oh, I probably should have some puffers and such around, accessible at all times, and with all that sort of stuff, and you sort of get wondering about it. But Tom, Phil, from what I understand, was actually a better guitarist than his brother.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
But Tommy was more of a showman. So Tommy got the limelight more so than what Phil did. And if you look at any of his videos and such online, Phil was an absolute incredible guitarist. Absolutely phenomenal. So very sad news. Died on the anniversary of, the 51st anniversary of Sgt. Pepper's, as we were talking about last week.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Mm, yeah, definitely rest in peace. We've had quite a few musicians leave us in the last sort of 12 months, haven't we?
Yeah.
There was David Holland from from Judas Priest, Jim Rodford from The Zombies. Who else? I don't know. There's been a lot. There's been... a bloody lot that have gone, and obviously a few famous people as well. You know, John Starks died as well. He was James Brown's drummer. He was a phenomenal drummer. And Lukey Edwards from The Ventures, who were
a
very, very famous band back in the day. So, you know, it's been a rough 12, 18 months. I think Craig McGregor died as well from Foghat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Didn't know about that.
Yeah, pretty sure. He died. I think he died in February. And Pat Tolpe, of course. Pat Tolpe died, Mr. Big's drummer.
Of course. I don't really have anything to add to that, unfortunately.
Well, maybe it's fortunately.
Yeah.
I suppose from this point, I mean, that's a bit of a... I mean, you're talking about death and such, and it's probably a bit of a weird segue into the death of nightlife.
That is a terrible, terrible segue.
Mate, I've got to tell you, there's people on Today Tonight to be proud of that segue.
Those of you around the world not familiar with Today Tonight is a particularly lowbrow current affairs program here in Australia, and they seem to have created segues into a damn art form.
Oh, mate.
Terrible, terrible, terrible segues.
We had a there was a comedy show here in Australia called The Chasers War and Everything, and they used to take the piss out of basically Anna Karin. Thank you. I was trying to think of a name. Yeah, Anna Karin.
Yeah, with the what have we learned from current affairs segment. There are a few of those on YouTube. I urge people to go and have a look at those if they want to know what we're talking about.
They're hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
So speaking of not knowing what we're talking about, I suppose you should probably explain to people, given that you're the Sydney local and probably are a little bit more knowledgeable about it than me, explain to the people of the good people of the internet what exactly we're talking about when we refer to lockout laws.
So lockout laws, or the Newcastle solution, as I heard it described as the other day, Newcastle local, mind you, that told me that. Lockout laws are something that was introduced by the New South Wales state government I want to say it was February 14.
Sounds about right, yeah.
The objective was to reduce violence fueled by alcohol. It was basically a knee-jerk reaction to a couple of what we call one-punch deaths, which is basically where someone comes up behind someone and punches them in the back of their head and kills them. Because that's a thing that happens in Australia. So the legislation was passed, I think from memory, February 14, and it requires what we call a lockout at 1:30 a.m. So basically you cannot get into any drinking or club venue after 1:30 a.m. So if you leave, you can't get back in. Even if you go out for a smoke, you can't go back in. Some areas are actually allowing that. They're actually putting designated smoking areas and such. But it's not such a big deal because we don't have a massive smoking population here in Australia.
And also as well, generally speaking, you're not allowed to smoke near the club, in the club, outside the club, all those sorts of things. For those of you who are not aware, smoking laws here in Australia are heavily, heavily restricted. Basically, you're not allowed to smoke anywhere in public here.
Yeah, basically. It's not quite as bad as that, but it is you're not allowed to smoke within certain areas, eating areas, and you can't actually take – the thing that pisses me off is I can't actually take my food into the smoking area.
Yes.
So if I've got mates – and I do. I've got a couple of friends who smoke. I don't smoke. But I want to go and I want to sit down and actually have a meal with them. I can't do that. Because you're not allowed to take the food into the smoking area, which I think is just absurd. And you know what the stupid thing is? It's not like it's a completely separate area. And 9 times out of 10, it's literally just divided by the fact that, oh, you go past this little sign that we've got put up in the middle of the courtyard. Yeah. And that's the smoking area, and this is the eating area.
The other thing, I mean, that's not just a draconian thing by the owners of the establishment. If the Department of Health came into an establishment in New South Wales and saw people smoking in the eating area or eating in the smoking area, that would constitute a large fine for the person smoking, every single person working behind the pub, and a $50,000 fine for the establishment owner.
Yep. And then probably a fine for the actual business itself.
Yes. Yeah,
as well.
Huge fines involved. This is another thing that has probably created lots of problems in nightlife is the ridiculous amount of regulations. And we're not talking about New South Wales here. We're talking about all of Australia, pretty much all of Australia. I'm not sure what the rules are in Victoria. I'm sure we'll hear about it because they have a whole other set of the way that they look at the nightlife, which we might get to later on.
Yep. but I mean, it's even got to the point now where they are enforcing strict patron limits as well within bars and clubs. So I went out last night. I went to Fortune of War for some food. There was a guy standing out the front, and I just went up to him and said, "Mate, can we go to we're going to go to the bistro?" And he said, "No, it's full." I said, "Okay, well then we'll go and we'll stand in the pub for a bit until it's not full." "Nah, can't let you." "Why?" "Because we're at the limit for people." So, mate, I understand you've got limits and all that sort of stuff, but seriously, who's are they going to come in here and they're going to count people in that? Yes, they do. Then they apparently do.
I've read a story somewhere. I'll have to see if I can find it and put it in the show notes about an establishment that got a fine for displaying their license in the wrong part of the bar.
Yes.
You have to have it up behind the bar in a certain place, and it has to be 70 feet from the entrance.
Yes, and you have to have the name of it on the door as well.
Yep.
It's just ridiculous. Yep. So it's fun police stuff. So we digress. But the actual lockout laws have gotten, as well as that, 3 a.m. last drinks at bars, pubs and clubs in Sydney. And there's actually a regulation as well that states whatever time your last drinks are, 2 hours prior to that is when you can stop selling shots. And unfortunately in Sydney, because of the infinite wisdom of the idiotic government that we currently have in, and I can say that because I voted for the bastards. So these morons actually have stated that you can't do shots. So I can't go to a quiet bar in the middle of Sydney, not that there's many of those left, but I can't go to a quiet bar and order a whiskey on the rocks. Because that's classed as a shot.
Same rules apply here in Western Australia as well. Actually, they have just, there's no, it's even worse here in Western Australia where I am.
How I first came across this was because I was living overseas for some time and I came back to Australia and I first experienced it when I flew back for my dad's birthday, actually. It was his 60th birthday and I flew back for it. And then a friend of mine called me up and said, hey, you're back in Sydney for a bit. Let's go for a drink. I said, okay. So I went into the pub and was yakking away with this guy, and I said, mate, can I get a double Jameson, please? And the guy said to me, no. And I said, what do you mean, no? No. And he goes, well, we close at 12. It's 10:05. I can't actually serve you that. And I said, why not? God. And he explained it all to me, and I said, right. And I said, so what can I have? And he said, you could put Coke with it. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, if you have a double, I can't. He said, I can't serve you a double. Because there's no doubles 2 hours prior to when we close. But if I give you 2 Jameson and Cokes or Jameson and Dries, that's fine. And I said, okay, what if I got 4? And he said, that's fine. And I said, so what you're saying is I could have 8 Jameson and Cokes, line them up, slam them all, and that's fine, but I can't have a double on the rocks. And he goes, yep.
Oh, God.
It's just ridiculous. It's typical of these lawmakers who have got no fucking idea how to run all this. So anyway, all of this was in response to these one-punch killings, I was saying. So there was a kid called Daniel Christie who died, I think from memory, January 2014. It was a random attack at around about 9 or 8 o'clock or something in the evening in the King's Cross. King's Cross, by the way, it was sort of our seedy area with all the clubs and everything like that and hookers and all the good stuff. And it happened.
I love the description, by the way.
It happened not too far from where another teenager called Thomas Kelly had been punched a couple of years prior. Now, Daniel Christie's family then got all up in arms and they called upon, you know, all the pollies basically to set laws that would help to curb alcohol-related violence.
Which in itself, just so we don't get a beating on the internet for this, is a good that's a thing that should happen. We need to stop alcohol related violence.
100%.
The problem that we both have with this is the way that the government have gone about it is unbelievably bad, and I don't think actually does a damn thing to help anybody.
No, it doesn't. I think it was within about 3 or 4 weeks. So you know, well done legislation. Obviously, would have been checked quite a lot in 3 weeks with an amendment to an act that had been in play for a while. It was the who was in it at the time. I think it was Barry O'Farrell, who was the state premier. Basically, started the legislative change. They announced the plans in the end of January and they introduced the Liquor Amendment Bill 2014 on the 31st of January 2014. And that amended 2 previous acts and regulation, an act and a regulation that was prior in 2007 and 8. And it would basically allow the minister.
Yeah, probably the minister for, actually it says here, says the minister for corrections, which is interesting because I thought it would have been the minister for racing, gaming, liquor licensing.
Yeah,
but apparently
not. That's what I would have thought as well. But anyway, it gave the minister regulation making power to declare areas as particular precincts and impose conditions on licensed premises within those precincts. So essentially giving the minister martial law powers. That's basically what they've done. it defined what was a new precinct called the CBD Entertainment Precinct, and it was the region that was bound within the inner of the city from King's Cross, Darlinghurst, Cockle Bay, The Rocks and Haymarket, including little sections of Surrey Hills. Basically, it went right out to Broadway, and stopped at, I think from memory, the first drinking establishment that wasn't affected. This was an area in Newtown. Now, I'll get onto that in a minute. Now, there were exemptions, of course. One of the regulations actually exempt venues within the defined CBD Entertainment Precinct that have poker machines installed.
Oh, God.
So these
How
venues...
How very obvious.
I know, right? These venues were allowed... They could permit entrance to patrons on the condition that they did not serve alcohol past 1:30 and do not provide entertainment other than the poker machines and background entertainment.
Here in the state that I live in, Western Australia, poker machines are only allowed within the casino. We do not have them in bars and clubs and that sort of thing. They are only in the casino.
Meantime,
New South Wales, on the other hand, New South Wales, on the other hand, they are allowed, as far as I can work out, essentially anywhere.
Basically, in any drinking establishment, from what I understand. I'm almost certain you could probably put them within a supermarket if they would let you. So what happened then was most licensed small bars were, to a maximum of, I think it was 50 or 60 people, restaurants, tourist accommodation, et cetera, could stay open past 3 a.m., but alcohol service is not permitted, wasn't permitted after that time. Outside the CBD Entertainment Precinct, however, the regulations actually end at Darling Harbour and coincidentally did not include the Star Casino.
Gee, what a surprise.
Yes. So the Star Casino... Essentially what happened, so all of this change, the impact on it, there was a report that was released in, I think it was April 2015, showed a reduction of about a quarter, so about 25% in assaults within the lockout area and a 32% reduction of assaults in King's Cross. However... There was a report that was released a couple of years later that showed that areas adjacent to the precinct, such as Newtown, which I spoke about a couple of minutes ago, showed an increase of 12% in assaults with a 17% increase in easy-to-reach areas. Now, the thing about that 32% reduction in King's Cross was that the foot traffic plummeted in King's Cross. Some people say it was around 50 or 60%, but I've seen estimations up to 89%.
So there's no great surprise that you have a reduction in assaults in an area where you've got 90% less people.
Correct. And then the flip side of that, of course, is that per capita, you actually have more assaults.
Oh, really?
Well,
so you've got less people, less assaults.
You've got less people, but the assaults haven't really curved off anywhere near as much. So if you had 100 people and you had... say, I don't know, 30 assaults, and I'm just pulling numbers out of the air here, and then you had a reduction of the number of people by 80%. So you had 20 people, but you had a reduction of 30, let's call it 33% because the numbers make it easy in my head, of that. So you then had 20 assaults. Your actual per capita crime rate's gone up.
Yeah,
but no one's talking about that because, of course,
not at all.
And then, of course,
that would essentially throw a red flag to the government to say that they have done essentially nothing to fix the underlying systemic problems associated with violence, which is the whole goddamn point of the laws.
I was about to say the biggest problem here in Australia, and we're getting slightly off topic, but the biggest problem here in Australia is that we have a drinking culture which basically says you drink to get drunk. As opposed to many other areas of the world. I mean, I can talk about Germany because I lived there. You can walk down the street in Berlin with a half a litre of beer in your hand and no one looks at you like you've got three heads. But
absolutely.
You do it here and the SWAT team will come and bloody pin you to the wall.
Yes.
But
same story in Bulgaria
there.
As well. I mean, I've spent quite a bit of time in Bulgaria. And same thing. It is a popular pastime amongst the younger people, I suppose, to grab some beer from a shop and go and sit in the park.
Yep. But you can't
sit
do that here.
Oh God, no! No, yeah. You wouldn't be allowed to do such a thing here. You'd be arrested.
Exactly, and then you add on to that the actual pricing and the costs of beer. I mean, we had other things that were added in as well to the mix, such as what we had a tax on alcopops.
That was quite a bit. That was quite a few years early. That was in 2008 or 2009.
Correct. Yes.
Just as a quick, so the federal government decided to put a tax on pre-mixed drinks. So say you buy a can of Jack Daniels and cola or something, that was going to cost significantly more. Mm. And they thought that this was going to curb binge drinking and alcohol-related violence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Correct.
Shock and surprise to absolutely nobody, because this was the sale of Alco Pops went down by a certain percentage, but the sale and percentage of buying an entire bottle of spirits went up by the same percentage.
Yeah.
So you know, people weren't buying the pre-mixed Jack Daniels and cola, but instead they were buying an entire bottle of Jack Daniels and Coke and mixing it themselves, which is far, far, far worse.
Exactly, because I don't know about you. I've got a whiskey collection myself, and I enjoy a tipple every now and then. But I never pour myself a single measure. It's always it's always a double or a triple.
Oh, and absolutely. And you could do – I've seen this. I mean, you've probably had the same thing happen in high school where they get you to just a standard, you know, plastic cup or whatever, mm-hmm. and then ask you to try and estimate what a 30-mil shot is.
Exactly.
And shock, surprise, everybody gets it wrong.
Yeah, it's shock, surprise. It's like, oh, yeah, that's like 30 mils. It's like, dude, that's 120. Like, you should be drinking wine out of that, you know. So,
yep.
So the point is – essentially, these lockout laws, and I'm sure anyone who's listening outside of this country, outside of Australia, is going, seriously, the fuck. And I would not blame you, because it's obscene. It is completely stupid. It makes no sense. And it has done sweet fuck all to actually stop any of the violence or any of the problems that we are actually seeing here.
And what it has done, which is what we're going to get, which is the main topic of why we brought this up, what it has done is effectively caused the closure of several live music venues where a lot of the bands that we love to see play, they're gone now.
Mm-hmm.
It's all gone.
Yeah.
I spoke earlier on a previous show about going to see Mono at the Newtown Social Club. Mm-hmm. That's gone. That's been closed down.
Yep, because people just aren't seeing the point in a lot of small bars and a lot of bars around the world, I presume, but particularly in Australia, they make a lot of money off marking up our already exorbitantly priced alcohol. So, you know, you go to a bar in Sydney and you pay $25 for a nip of spirits, where you could buy the whole bottle for $110.
Yep.
So it's obscene, all right? The amounts are obscene. However, the stopping of serving alcohol after a certain time and not serving spirits and it's actually stopped these guys from being able to afford things like putting a band on. And because people aren't going because they can't drink, there's no point. So they have a couple of pre-drinks at home, which means by the time they get there, they've had half a skinful, so they can't actually get in. So the bands see the drop-off in the people that actually want to come and play, so they stop putting bands on. And then next second, the business folds. And that's essentially the vicious cycle that we find ourselves in now. So there's nowhere there are a few small venues around, but realistically, there's probably a handful. There's a place in the city called Frankie's, which is a pizza place, which has got up-and-coming acts playing all the time. It's actually a pretty good venue, I've got to admit. But the guy that runs it knows that he's basically the only guy around and never answers his phone. You've got to basically keep on him for 6 months to get one shot there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's actually remarkably frustrating. There's a few others around as well, but on the whole, most people don't pay for a band anymore. They just say, yeah, you can come and play, but that's about all we're going to do if there's anyone that actually wants to put you on. So the live music industry, which is a $3 billion industry in Sydney, has just vanished. I don't know if you saw it, but the basement is gone.
Even though I don't live in Sydney, I've traveled there semi-regularly because it should be a surprise to nobody, but seems to be. Nobody tours Perth. Expect a band to fly 4,500 kilometres across essentially an open, wide desert. Sorry, Adelaide. That's another problem as well. Nobody tours Adelaide either, which is the only major city between Melbourne and Perth. Mm-hmm. Nobody tours there either because the economics of touring.
The Basement is, for those that don't know, a extremely iconic jazz and blues venue in Australia. We've had people play there. A lot of Australian artists have played there, people like Glenn Shorrock and Brian Cadd and Russell Morris, people like that. But we've also had very, very, very big international artists play there, the likes of people like Albert Lee. Very big international names have played there. That's now gone. That was a very, very quick announcement. It blindsided everyone. I actually had tickets to go and see someone there. It was a jazz night to go there with my dad, and I just got a refund on the tickets, and they said, sorry, mate, tough.
Mm.
And this is what's happening here. So when you're a starting up band and you're trying to get gigs and you're trying to actually push out from the area that you're starting in, there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to play. There's nowhere that's going to put you on. We've got tiny little venues that hold maybe 40 or 50 people, and then we've got, you know, 500, 600, 700 venue shows, and then we've got stadiums. That's it.
Yep.
There's no progression. So it's not hard to understand why bands. I've got friends of mine playing a band called Polaris. Polaris are they're a bit screamy. They're a bit of a faucet band for my liking. but they're doing really well, and I respect them for what they do, and I really respect their musicality as well. But they are, I mean, they're over in Europe, I think, at the moment, touring over there because they just can't do the gigs here and they can't get the exposure here to do things. The Lockharts are doing the same. Stacks of Australian bands actually never make it in Australia, but they make it overseas first. They make it in particularly in European countries where there are places to play.
Absolutely. And, I mean, just as the probably one of the bigger ones, Tame Impala, same thing. Nobody really heard of them here in Australia. They left, they went to America, they got big. All of a sudden, they're huge here.
Yep. It's exactly.
Yeah. Just as a bit of real-time follow-up, Prince did a secret unannounced gig at the Basement one night when he toured here in 2012.
Yep. Yep.
So,
And it should be noted as well, the vast majority of these assaults as well that have happened, which is what these lockout laws were supposedly targeting, happened at places like the Ivy, Home Nightclub, PJ's Irish Pub, or the Star. So not really venues where you have rock music.
Mm.
They're music venues where you've got DJs and people, you know, coked out of their head or on pingers or what have you.
Or just a gratuitous amount of alcohol.
Yeah, it could be that. But, I mean, the guy who killed Thomas Kelly from memory, he was roided up. Mm. He was not – that had little to do with alcohol. And I'm fairly certain the other – Daniel as well, the other guy, he was not killed by a guy who had a high BAC.
Mm.
But if you compare what's going on at the moment in Sydney and you compare it to a place like, for example, Amsterdam – where they actually have someone who is a night manager who is
Yes, the nightmare of Amsterdam.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's his job basically to keep the nightlife thriving there. And I don't know about you, but I have never been to Amsterdam and seen it quiet. I've never seen a quiet night in Amsterdam, ever. Meantime here, there was that photo that came, I think it was posted to Reddit about a month ago. It was something like, this is how vibrant Circular Quay is on a Saturday night. And this guy took a photo.
There was no one.
It wasn't like there was one or two people hanging around. There was fucking no one there, which is dangerous as well. You know, this is a city that we call an international city, and on a Friday and Saturday night, there's fuck all to do.
I know what the government were trying. They're trying to curb, you know, they're trying to curb violence, but they've just gone completely arse about.
Mm, absolutely, and you know, there's a list here I've pulled up of the 10 most violent venues in Sydney, and Ivy is number one, with 36 assaults apparently. However, the Star Casino from memory had about 90 last year. So why isn't that on this list?
And there's another article here, an article in the Sydney Morning Herald claiming from the boss of the casino that the Star doesn't need Sydney's lockout laws. which is a bit like saying that turkeys never vote for the early Christmas. Yeah. Of course they don't. Of course we don't need the lockout laws because it'll dramatically affect our business. Like it's affected every fucking venue around Sydney.
Exactly.
But we don't need
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's you know, oh, sorry, I've pulled up that same article. I'm reading it here now. This equates to 75 assaults in the Star a year, three times the number recorded for Central Sydney nightclub Ivy, which was named in December as the state's most violent venue.
Unbelievable. And they're okay.
They can
keep going, yeah.
I saw Evermore at the Star when they first opened their sports bar. I don't know if they still have gigs in there or not. I think it's the Lyric Theatre, which is attached to it, but that's quite a large venue. But, you know, in the context, there's a spokeswoman for the Star here who says, in the context of the Star receiving more than 11 million visitors per year to a single site, far higher than any other venue in New South Wales, we believe our record on guest safety is very strong. Of course you do.
Yeah. Why would they say any different?
Exactly. Exactly. It was, anyway.
Like I said, turkeys never vote for the early Christmas.
Yep. 100%. 150%. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you've got the other areas outside of the city now. So you've got, I mentioned Newtown. Now, Newtown is a section of Sydney. It comes under the Inner West. And we'll get on to talking about the Inner West Council in a minute. I think you wanted to make a couple of mentions about them closing venues down and such.
Yeah.
I remember it used to be a place you used to go out to have a couple of drinks. It was quieter. It was still happening. There was a bit of a buzz, but, you know, you could actually move inside the pub. You could go to the pub and get two beers for you and your mate, and then you could actually turn around and walk without some tosser standing behind you, breathing down your neck, built like a brick shithouse. And then when you run into him and spill a bit of beer, he starts getting arced up because he's a fuckwit.
You've just described essentially every pub in Northbridge in Perth. Carry on.
This is how it is now here in – it was never like that. I remember when I came back that night that I went out for the drink with my mate, we wound up in Newtown, and I saw a guy run off the sidewalk up to a car that was driving past and had stopped and beeped their horn and proceeded to kick the door in.
Oh, that's nice.
Hmm. So needless to say, I haven't been to Newtown for quite some time.
Last time I came to Sydney was to see that band Mono. That was – 2.5 years ago now.
Yep.
And yeah, I was staying near Newtown, not actually in Newtown. Yeah.
So you know, it's
You wanted to talk about the Inner West Council and how, I mean, now we've talked about how the state government of New South Wales are squeezing the hell out of live communities and local music venues. Now let's talk about how the next level of government down, the local councils, are screwing it up.
So one other thing to add to the melting pot of stock that seems to be, you know, made mostly with shit coming from the government, is governments now, particularly local councils, bending to the whims of people that move into an area when large established venues have loud music playing on a Friday and Saturday night. So there's been a spate over the last couple of years of venues being closed simply due to the fact that they have a loud band playing and a few people get arced up and they start getting annoyed. Now, I know previously we've spoken about things being very loud and we don't like, you know, venues like being inside a room when it's very loud and turning volumes up during shows and so on and so forth. But I don't know about you, Hoggy, but if I moved into a house that was situated, you know, literally right behind a pub that was having live music on a Saturday night, I don't think I have the right to complain about the fact that there's live music there. I mean, surely you should have checked that out before you bought the fucking house.
Oh, absolutely. And this is not – now we're just moving to – this happens all the time here. This happened, I believe, in Perth. There was a venue in Northbridge called The Bakery, which I used to frequent quite a bit. Mm-hmm. That has now been closed down by a combination of the local council upping the council rates to the point of damn near extinction for all the venue, and a lot of locals who moved into Northbridge complaining about the loud noise. And it's like, God damn it, you people are idiots.
Yeah. I know Newtown Social Club was closed due to, I think they blamed the regulatory climate or something. I think that was their excuse, and I don't think from memory they elaborated too heavily on it. But the other one as well was Blackwire Records.
Yeah, I'm going to put a link.
I think you know a little bit more about this one than I do. I'm not all over what happened there. What happened?
So I'm going to put a link in the show notes to an article from an organization called Unbelievably Bad Mag, which goes into a pretty in-depth discussion about what happened to Black Wire Records and their battles with the Inner West Council, and how they were essentially screwed around by them essentially to drive them out of business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading through the article now. It all sounds very, very similar to things that I've heard happening to venues here in Perth.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, they were essentially running a town. This, I mean, and just as a point of interest, this happened about a year ago.
Yeah.
This article was written in April 25, 2017. As far as I know, Black Wire Records have not found anywhere to go since then, which is a real shame. It was a record store that used to play host to gigs of a progressive and underground nature. A lot of post-rock bands, a lot of sort of underground metal bands used to play there.
Mm.
Very, very good for the local music scene and essentially run out of town by the council.
Yeah. And I think from memory they were really close to the live – what used to be in Sydney a thing called the Live Music District, which was – between, I think, the Empire and Annandale hotels.
Yes, that's right. They were in there.
Yep. And they were in there. And so, I mean, why would you close down a venue for a noise violation when they're in an area which is called the Live Music District?
Yeah.
Makes no fucking sense.
It's just an infuriating situation, and I cannot understand for the life of me how the hell it happened and why.
No. So the problem with a lot of this is, as I alluded to a little earlier, is it has absolutely all of these lockout laws and these, you know, regulatory bullshit that seems to be going on in this country has absolutely destroyed Sydney's nightlife, to the point where you go out on a Saturday night, and assuming there's not some kind of event on, if it's just a regular Saturday night, there's no one around. I got talking to the president of the Small Bars Association in New South Wales. It so happened I actually went to his establishment. He owns a place in the city called Grasshopper, I think it's called. And I went in to get a drink, and they couldn't serve me because of the lockout laws. So walked in, he saw me walk in, and I walked out. And as I walked out, he grabbed me and said, "Hey, you leaving? Is everything okay?" And I said, "Man, I can't get this drink I want." So we actually went. He went and rolled a smoke, walked the prerequisite distance away that he had to walk, and we had a chat for about 45 minutes about the situation. And it's even got to the point now where if you own, you can't do what's called takeaways after a certain time. So let's say for argument's sake that you're a chef and you close the kitchen at 9 o'clock, because everything closes in Sydney at 9 o'clock. You can't get food after that time. Real intelligent.
Yeah.
So you close it up, you do your washing and everything like that, you wash up, you finish up, you walk out of the door at 10 o'clock and you think, you know what, I want to get a bottle of wine to take home. You can't do that.
Yep.
Even this guy, he said, the stupid thing is I've bought all this wine, I've bought these bottles of spirits and everything, they're mine, they're in my inventory. I can't take a bottle of spirits from my inventory that I own and take it home, because that's technically taking a takeaway.
That's ridiculous.
Yep. But what we do have in this city now is we have these alcohol delivery services. So there's one, I think there's one called Jimmy Brings, and there's a couple of others as well, where you can literally buy alcohol online and they will bring it to you.
Oh, for God. And this is like a sort of a means to get around the laws of the time.
Kind of, yeah. And that, you can do that until 11 o'clock.
You watch, that'll get shut down now.
No, it's been going for months. Like, it's actually been going a couple of years. So I can't go down to the pub and buy a bottle of wine at 10 o'clock, but I can get these guys to bring it to me for a premium.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
So it's an absolute clusterfuck, listeners, as you can hear.
Now that we've spent a good hour complaining about all the stupidities of the city lockout laws, mm-hmm. I guess the big burning question that I have is, let's say you're in charge, you're running the show, you're running New South Wales now. What on earth would you do to sort of come up with a solution to curb the alcohol-related violence and not completely destroy the town in the process?
Mm. I think for me, the first thing I would do is I would take a leaf out of Amsterdam's book and I would instigate the idea of having a night mayor who is in charge of keeping nightlife going and so on and so forth. I would definitely relax the laws on small bars, and I would actually encourage them to have live music. And whether that's a jazz band or whether it's a rock band or whether it's – who don't care, get people and drive them into the city on a Friday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. The other thing as well is you've got to curb alcohol-related violence, and I really think that starts with education. So you look at – I remember being on a on the U-Bahn on the way home in Berlin, and there were these very drunk, rowdy Americans on the U-Bahn with me, and I was sitting there, and there was another German guy, and he ended up standing up, turning around and absolutely ripping these guys a new one. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning. And basically saying, you're being disrespectful, you're too drunk, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And he sat down and said to me, I'm really sorry about that. I don't normally, you know, have outbursts like that. And I said, no, it's fine. Someone had to say something. But it all starts with the education, I think, side of things, where we need to change the culture of drinking in this country from a culture which where you go out and you get basically hammered, and that's what you do because everyone else is doing it and it's awesome, to one of, well, no, let's actually just enjoy the evening. Let's have a couple of drinks. Yeah, okay, let's get a little drunk, like no problems at all, but let's be respectful. And I think that's partly as well due to the drinking age being 18 here in this country and the such strict laws around. Yeah, if you provide alcohol to anyone under 18, even if it's in your own house, say it's your son or your daughter or something like that, and you want to give them a glass of wine, that's illegal. And that's like a $150,000 fine if you get caught.
Really? That high?
It's massive.
Goodness me.
Massive. It's potential jail time.
God.
Because it's providing minors with alcohol.
And of course, making things a taboo never actually works. I'm reminded of a quote by John Denver in 1985 when he was giving evidence to the Congress at the PMRC hearings. And his quote was, "That which is denied becomes that which is most desired, and that which is hidden becomes that which is most interesting. Consequently, a great deal of time and energy is spent trying to get at what's being kept from you."
That's right. I mean, how many times do you say to a kid, don't steal a cookie out of the jar? What's the first thing they're going to do? They're going to steal a cookie out of the jar because it's taboo.
Well, the other hilarious part of it was there were several, just to speak about the PMRC again, there were several rappers who openly acknowledged that they used to swear more on their records to get that tip, you know, the so-called tipper sticker on their records because the kids would buy it more.
That's right.
Because it was like, ooh, it's a taboo, you know.
That's
the
right.
Guy says, you know, the F word too many times, and so they put a sticker on it. They sold more copies.
That's right.
It's hilarious.
That's right. And I mean, if you look at one of the other biggest problems that we have in Sydney is we call ourselves the government calls this city an international city. It couldn't be further from the truth. One of the big things that we need in this city is 24-hour transport. So a lot of the assaults and such that happened in the King's Cross, it wasn't like you had, for example, 30 assaults in a night and they were stretched out evenly. They were all clustered toward the end of the evening when people had a skinful. They would be standing on the side of the road waiting for a cab because all the trains stop at 1 o'clock for some fucked up reason.
Same thing here in Perth. All the trains are pretty well stopped.
Yep.
I think on a Friday and Saturday night, I think there is one train that runs at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yep. So you've got all of these people with a skinful standing on the side of the road waiting to go home. Next second, someone bumps someone and it's on for young and old because their inhibitions are next to gone. And so have 24-hour public transport is one of the biggest things.
Yeah, then you can just leave. I mean, it's all great and well to lock people out of the venues, but you need to give them a means to go home.
That's right. And they don't have a means to go home except for Uber or, you know, one of those other, which Uber's doing reasonably well with it. But, you know, it shouldn't just be
reasonably well amongst the patrons. I happen to know, because I use Uber quite a bit to get to and from the airport at ridiculously early hours of the morning to get to work, the drivers are not very happy with Uber.
No.
Because they're getting ripped off like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, and there's movements at the moment in Sydney. This is a different topic, but there are movements to actually basically force Uber to pay minimum wage, which would be good.
That's happening. There's a lot of – that's almost – yeah, the I've heard of stories in America where the drivers are essentially trying to unionize.
And I mean, you know, there should be a 24-hour culture here in Sydney, but there isn't one. There should be, as I said, there should be a nightmare. There should be, you know, evidence-based decision-making that, you know, basically
evidence-based decision-making in politics. What are you crazy?
So again, I go back to the Dutch and back to Netherlands. There was a story coming from the Netherlands. I heard when I was over there. I was over there for a couple of weeks for work, and long story short, there used to be 400 drownings a year in the canals, whereas now there's only 4. And how they did that was they basically figured out who was drowning, which was, you know, males aged somewhere between 18 and 28 years old with a high blood alcohol content and their zippers undone. So they were figuring, well, these guys are getting a skinful. They're going to relieve themselves in the canal, falling in and drowning. So why don't we install urinals that pop up of an evening all the way around the canals? And the drownings went from 400 that year to 4. Now, if that happened in Sydney, Australia, they'd just go, right, put the fences up and put electrify them and make sure that people can't go on there, and big signs, you know.
And coppers standing around waiting to bust anyone who tries to go for a whiz in the canal.
Exactly. And it's not practical. The very pragmatic approaches, and I think that's the formula that we need to be following. And there also needs to be an education side of things as well about alcohol, because the thing is, alcohol is a drug. Right? A lot of people don't realize that. A lot of people don't class it as a drug. It is the biggest cause of so many ailments around the world. And we're okay with it. We're just fine with, you know, just leave it as it is, but we'll just make it really hard to buy.
The whole idea around the temperance movement and trying to limit the sale of alcohol, this is not the first time this has been done. I mean, we take it back to something that's sort of referred to now as the 6 o'clock swill.
Yes.
So 6 o'clock closing in pubs was adapted in just after the First World War.
Yes.
This is how long we're talking about. And essentially meant the pub had to close at 6 o'clock. So unsurprisingly, men would knock off from work at 5 o'clock, go to the pub, have as many beers as they could possibly drink in an hour, and then drive home.
Yep.
And this was supposed to try and limit... You know, try and limit the amount of drinking by closing the pub at 6 o'clock, and it had the complete opposite effect. And there were lots of increases in domestic violence, lots of increases in drink driving, all of these things. And this rule only existed at pubs at the time. But then things would open up that were referred to as workers' clubs, soldiers' clubs, sportsmen's clubs that were classed slightly differently, and they could stay open to whatever the hell they want. So this is not the first time, and this lasted until, rather embarrassingly, 1967 when they moved the closing hours out to 10 o'clock.
Yep. And even then, 10 o'clock is not long enough. I mean, you've got 24-hour pubs that stay open in London and places like that.
Isn't there some place in Berlin that doesn't open until 3 a.m.?
There's clubs in Berlin that don't open until god-awful hours. You know, I mean, there's clubs there that don't close. We are so backward in our thinking here for the arts and the culture. And that's the thing. It really does feel like an attack on the arts and an attack on the culture precincts.
Yeah.
That's the problem, is that there is no support, or there is very little support for the arts and for culture and for, you know, all of that kind of stuff here in Sydney and probably in other areas as well. And it's just ham-fisted approaches to try and they're trying to treat symptoms rather than trying to treat causes.
Yeah.
I mean, Governments do that very well, don't they? But
yes, they do, especially here. I think the other thing is as well, it's a complete – I mean – I think we've sort of danced around this before as well, but referring to the war on drugs and the flip side to that, which is the harm minimization model coming from
the Netherlands.
Was it them that started it, or was it somewhere else in the Scandinavian countries? I thought it was one of the Scandinavian.
I don't know if they started it, but it is there. Yeah. It's probably one of the Scando countries. I mean, it's close enough anyway. I mean, the Dutch are pretty well Scandinavian.
I'll leave you to field the angry emails on that one.
That's fine. Let them send me angry emails. It's close enough.
But these are the two completely differing styles, and I think it's widely acknowledged now that the war on drugs is an abject failure.
Absolutely.
And that and all it has seemed to do is just put more – well, this is mainly in America – put more black people in jail.
That's right.
And the harm minimization model seems to have done more to remove – you know, these harder drugs from society than the war on drugs ever did.
That's right. Because it starts with education.
Yep.
Right. Education is the thing.
And removing the taboo.
And removing the taboo. That's correct. So, you know, I mean, you look at, you can take it even to sex education. You know, I went to a school where sex education was basically, yeah, we have to teach it, but it's a Christian school, so don't do it.
Ugh.
Yeah, worked well, right?
This is another, yeah, religion.
Oh, man, yeah.
Are you sure we're doing the right podcast?
No, I'm not certain we are. but if you don't educate people on any of this sort of stuff, then they never get presented with the correct facts, so then they make stupid decisions. And that's
decisions based upon crap from terrible sources.
Yes, like the internet. And, like Twitter. Yeah. And we've come full circle. The lockout laws in this country have absolutely decimated any resemblance of nightlife that this city ever had. It's pissed off a lot of people in the process. It's pissed off a lot of bands. You can't get gigs anymore. And that's speaking from someone who was a working musician for 10 years. You know, unless you're playing larger stadiums and larger shows, you're fucked.
Yep.
And you can't do a backyard show with people because then the cops come and shut it down because you're too loud.
You're too loud, or you haven't got the right license, or whatever the other problems are that are associated with that.
Whatever excuse it is that they want to pull up.
And you know what the worst thing is here in Western Australia, I hear about them talking about doing lockout laws here in Western Australia. It comes up as a popular topic of discussion every now and then. Yes. And it's like, oh God, these don't work.
Yeah.
It does fuck all and completely destroys the art.
That's
which
right.
Here in Perth is not a particular, is, you know, already sort of on the outer anyway. There's lots of problems surrounding the arts. I mean, the same sort of things that we've been talking about in Sydney with local councils happen here in Perth too.
Yep. So for those of you who are listening overseas and you don't know what a local council is, because there are some countries where it doesn't quite compute across, we have three levels of government here in Australia, which is three too many in my opinion. we've got the local councils who's basically, their role is to be a pain in the ass to the state government and to pick up the bins. That's about all it is.
I think Jeremy Clarkson once made a quote that something about local councils in England, all they should do is build public libraries and collect my rubbish and that's it.
That's exactly correct. I mean, the rest of the stuff can be easily done by the state government. So state government is obviously the government of the states. So we have many states in Australia. We've got, six states, is it? Plus two territories as well. Then we've got the federal government, which is obviously the government of Australia as we know it. So these laws that we're talking about come on at a state level. And the local councils are the ones who are shutting venues down because they're too loud. You know, it's just – they were actually even talking about Marrickville, and there's a lot of warehouse parties that happen in a suburb in Sydney called Marrickville, and it's mostly raves and things like that. I went to one a couple of months ago. It was a lot of fun. It was actually a lot of fun. Halfway through the night, the cops came through.
Presumably to check on some sort of licensing thing, or they'd had a noise complaint or something like that.
Mate, what licensing thing? It was an abandoned fucking warehouse.
So it's a noise complaint. Some person made a noise complaint or
in
some
the middle of an industrial area.
Apparently.
Like, seriously, and this is the other half of the problem is we've got these busybodies who have got nothing better to do with their lives than to fucking spoil everyone else's fun.
I think of them as like Mrs. Lovejoy from The Simpsons.
Yes. You know,
won't someone please think of the children? It's like, fuck off.
Yeah, exactly. I'm 18. Fuck off. I'm 18. I am an adult by legal standards. Now, you and I can have a discussion as to whether or not that's actually a good thing. But the reality is it is what it is, right? The latest news with this lockout laws, by the way, is something that came courtesy of 7 News the other night. 7 News, by the way, is one of our big news people here, where they're saying they're going to start relaxing the lockout laws and they're going to start doing this. But the whole article was totally misleading. It had nothing to do with, you know, shake up of lockout laws, or, you know, it was a partial relaxation of license freezes. So what they did is they actually froze a lot of licenses and they actually told a lot of people you cannot continue to operate at this venue until we deem it okay that you can. All right. Now, I'm just going to put it out there. Mate, that's fucking fucking totalitarian. That's like one step away from having a 38-degree leg movement and marching down the road to some sort of strange man with a weird moustache holding his arm up.
This is a common complaint amongst Australians about the nanny state. I mean, people like to talk about the nanny state. And when they start doing stuff like this, you know, it's not surprising that people have those views and sort of think of this place as a nanny state.
Absolutely. And I mean, the nanny state thing, oh, we're looking out for you. It's okay, I get that. I get that you're looking out for me, right? And I appreciate the fact that you are attempting to look out for my my well-being and everything. But I am an adult. I can make my own decisions. Mm. Like, that's really what it all comes down to, is that we are not in this country being treated like adults. We are being treated as subjects. The amount of times I've had arguments with family members about, oh, well, you shouldn't be out at 12 o'clock because you should be home in bed. It's like, mate, that's not your decision to make. It's my decision to make that. If I want to stay out until 3 o'clock in the morning drinking with my friends, I can do that. Not that I drink all that heavily, mind you. I might have one or two beers. So the thing that pisses me off the most about all of this is that it affects me not because of the drinking side of things. These bars and pubs and such are closing because they can't make the money from the alcohol, so they're not putting bands on. I like to go out and see bands on the weekend. I photograph bands. It's one of my avenues of income, right? This is actually affecting my business now.
Mm. And yeah, you know, I imagine the business of just about everybody who is even tangentially related to the live music scene.
Correct. It was this $1.21 billion industry that is now worth something like $500 million to the economy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And now it's been effectively halved.
Well, yeah, much. And I mean, this is the industry output was 1.21 billion. The direct industry value add was 651.9 million. And direct industry employment full time equivalence was 14,866 jobs.
Yeah.
And that's, so for all this, that's across Australia. And now it's in New South Wales. New South Wales makes up 33.2% of the entire industry's bars and pubs and things like that, and a good half of those are now gone.
You know, for all the sort of banging on about the government trying to create jobs, they sure seem to be doing a hell of a great job of destroying them.
Mm, exactly. Exactly. You know, they're not only are they wasting money hand over fist with, you know, all this shit that they're trying to – I mean, anyway, it's just obviously even harder when it comes to niche stuff like prog music, because you basically have to wait for a large international act to tour and then try and get on the bill.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, if you look at...
And I imagine at some point we will probably try and get a promoter on the show to talk about the specific issues related to this. But I dare say that a lot of those larger international acts, it's getting more and more difficult to get them to Australia, find them somewhere to play, and then make money on it.
If you have a juggernaut like Tool come over, right, they can easily sell out a stadium. No problems. But if you've got a smaller artist, say Stephen Wilson... Stephen Wilson's probably going to be able to sell out the Enmore Theatre.
Oh, I would imagine so, yeah.
But if you get someone smaller again under that, say like Caligula's Horse, say, for example, they're Australian. Not a lot of people have heard them. Carnival would probably sell out the Metro Theatre. I think that's about 600 people.
Yeah, Carnival managed it when they played last time. Carnival played here in Perth, their own goddamn hometown. They sold out a pub with 1,000 people in it.
They're pretty massive bands here. So if you get the smaller, even smaller bands again, and you start looking at local acts and they're trying to work their way up, where do they play?
Yeah, exactly.
They just don't.
Yeah.
So
it's essentially, you know, a lot of the pub rock bands of old. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm talking like Midnight Oil, Skyhawks, AC/DC, et cetera, et cetera. They all got their start playing in pubs.
Yep.
And now, God, you'd be lucky to get anybody to play in a pub.
No, you just can't do it because the pokey machines have taken over and there's nowhere to play because it's all, you know, bullshit basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've covered a lot of ground. We've covered a lot of ground on that one.
This has been a whinging. This is a two old men whinging episode.
We knew that this episode was going to come. We knew this, I suspect, is probably going to generate a lot of feedback and a lot of people. I'd love to hear what's happening in your local, in your part of the world. What is, you know, does the same sort of thing exist in your neck of the world?
Yeah.
What are people, what are the people doing? What's happening? How are they trying to combat this?
And you know, moreover, what are your thoughts?
You could just send an email and point and laugh.
I mean, by all means, you know, send us an email of a GIF of Nelson from the from Simpsons. And you know what? I would love to get every single one of those, the hundreds I'm presuming that we will receive, and show them to my friends in the Liberal Party. Like, seriously, this is what we are to the rest of the world.
Absolutely. And I would say as well, to those of you out there who are similarly as pissed off as we are and want to try and find something, you know, want to do something about it, I would suggest writing a very, very long email to your local Member of Parliament.
Yep, absolutely.
Let them know how pissed off you are. Let them know how it's affected you and your friends or the bands that you love. It's like, why can't I go and see my favourite band play here locally? Because if your laws that don't help and haven't really solved the underlying systemic issues that they were brought in to solve, but have almost destroyed art.
Yes. Yep. The other thing you can do as well is, and I'm not affiliated with these guys at all, but there is an organisation called Keep Sydney Open, and their vision is basically to, and I'm reading off their website here, assert Sydney's position as a global 24-hour city through creative, social and economic vibrancy. So you can definitely get involved with those. And, of course, get involved with us online. You know, tell us what you think. Tell us whether or not you think we're wrong. I mean, if I'd love to open a dialogue with someone and have a chat if you think that we're barking up the wrong tree, if you think these lockout laws are a good thing.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting to see the other side of this argument.
Yeah.
Why you may think that these are a good thing?
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be great to talk about that. Look, I think that's a really good point to leave it on there. Is just talking about, you know, let's get some more opinions from the fans and from people that are listening in. And I think we should move on to our records from the last week.
Yes. You gave me a record to listen to by Jed Wheeldon and The Willing called History of Forgotten Things.
Yes. So and what did you record, think?
I really liked it. As a great follow-on from last week where the record you gave me I did not like at all. This one I really, really enjoyed.
So what was it? What was the standout track and what was it about the album that you really enjoyed?
I do have – I mean, for all my sort of the love of progressive music and the long songs and stuff like that, I do have a great affinity for singer-songwriter type stuff. Crowded House, I'm a particularly big fan of, and Neil Finn's solo work I particularly like. Mm-hmm. So to approach it from that, I really enjoy that type of music. And this one, and I'm going to single out one song in particular, the second one on the album called Tricks on Me,
yes,
which I really liked.
Yep. That's one of my favourites on that.
Fantastic. So I really enjoyed that one. And it just put me in a really good mood.
Track number four on that is called Drones.
Oh, yeah. That was another one I was going to single out as well as one that I particularly liked.
So that was actually on the Dollhouse soundtrack.
Ah, I was going to just – that was another part of my notes, actually. This music does sound like the sort that I would possibly hear on some sort of soundtrack.
So from memory, Drones was used in the final scene of the actual show. Again, another one of Joss Whedon's shows that was cancelled. From memory, this one got two seasons, so hurrah. It didn't quite get cancelled after – well, before even the first one had finished airing. Thanks, Fox, you dickheads.
yeah, I'll definitely be returning to this one. I'll actually go and buy it.
It's going to get another spin. Shit, that's big praise from you there, Hoggy.
So what about the album that I gave you?
So the album that you gave me was the Snow Goose – by Camel.
I have a piece of small follow-up on that, actually. The album is supposed to be called Music Inspired by the Snow Goose.
Correct.
The Snow Goose is actually a book. Yes, the Snow Goose, A Story of Dunkirk, was a novella published by Paul Gallico in 1940.
Yep.
And there were numerous copyright problems surrounding the creation of this album. There were supposed to be some lyrics that went with the album that never got were not put on the album because of copyright problems.
Right. So is the book about Dunkirk, like the Battle of Dunkirk?
No. It is set in and around the Dunkirk evacuation.
Right.
But I don't think it's necessarily about that specifically.
Okay. Because I got the feeling that this was video game music, listening to
really?
It. I
really?
Felt, yeah, it felt like something that belonged in, like, Final Fantasy.
Okay.
Particularly, my favorite track on the album was, I don't know how to say it, Rayada?
Ah, yeah, Rayada or something like that.
Rayada, yeah, I don't know how to say it. Yeah, so Rayada was probably my favorite on the album. It had this sort of playful flute going on, and it was just a fun album, I found, to listen to the whole way through. But I found that it bridged the gap almost between Pink Floyd and Jethro Tull.
Yeah.
That was vibe that I got twixt the two of it, because there are moments in it where it's really Pink Floyd.
So it bridged the gap between Pink Floyd and
Jethro Tull.
And Jethro Tull, which makes sense because the album was recorded and released in 1975, which is right around the height of both of those bands.
There you go. So it was, I really enjoyed it. It was an ecstatically good album. It's had a couple of spins so far since over the week. In particular, songs out of it, I've just sort of cherry picked. Oh, I want to listen to that one. I want to listen to that one. But it was good. It was very good. So yeah, definitely worth a listen. We'd obviously love to hear your opinions, dear listeners, as well, on any of the music that we recommend, dare I say, on the actual podcast.
So what I'm going to do, I will put a link to this in the show notes, is I will create a Spotify playlist of all the music and all the albums that we've recommended for each other so far in this series. Mm-hmm. And so people can go and have a listen to all of those.
Definitely a good idea, I think. So what have you got for me for this week?
The one thing I was going to say about the Jed Will, now that I did not just thought of as there, it sort of reminded me of a band called Anathema. Are you familiar with Anathema?
Anathema? Are they from Melbourne?
No, Anathema is a London-based band. So because the Jed Will album reminded me of Anathema, I'm going to recommend for you an album by this band called Weather Systems from 2012.
Okay, Weather Systems by Anathema. Okay.
Yep. So what have you got for me?
So I was thinking about this over the week, what I am going to recommend you, just simply because I kind of want to do something that maybe you've listened to, but maybe you haven't, or maybe you haven't listened to for some time. How are you with your knowledge of Australian music?
I'd count myself as a pretty reasonable fan of that sort of stuff, which it depends on which era you're talking about and what you've got in mind. So what do you have in mind?
The one that I wanted to speak to you about and show you was a band called the Little River Band, who were
I certainly know of the Little River Band.
So the Little River Band were basically there's a quote from a radio DJ in the mid 70s from the United States, who said the Little River Band have paved the highway for other Australian acts to follow. So these guys were the guys that brought Australian music to the rest of the world. So the album that I want to get you to listen to is just called Diamantina Cocktail.
Okay.
Diamantina Cocktail.
Yep, from 1977. Yep.
1977, Diamantina Cocktail. And there's actually a version on Spotify, I think, that's a remaster in about 2010. And this has some of It's got some absolutely amazing tracks. It's pop rock kind of stuff, you know, from the 70s. But these guys were absolute juggernauts of the Australian industry. So it'd be very interesting to hear your thoughts on that one as well, which is Help Is On Its Way.
Now that I've pulled it up on Wikipedia, that they have probably the song that I assume everybody has probably heard, Help Is On Its Way. That's probably the biggest hit that they had, would say.
Yep, absolutely. But I mean, on that album as well, you had some other absolutely phenomenal tracks, which I won't tell you which ones are my favorites. I'll let you have a listen.
All right. So I think that's probably a good point to leave today's episode. I'm going to flip the channel slightly. Dave, what are we talking about next week?
Next week, we're going to be talking about metal music in popular culture. There's a lot of stuff that's going on at the moment where, you know, metal is no longer really on the fringe, I don't think. It is becoming far more acceptable in mainstream society. So, you know, we're going to be talking about things like the immensely popular cartoon Metalocalypse, which is an Adult Swim cartoon.
I love that cartoon.
it's so funny. It's great.
If people out there haven't seen it, please watch it before the next episode.
Yeah, and then you'll understand this statement of your guitarton sounds like dildos. obviously, you know, online remixes of pop songs now in metal style. So you got a lot of people like Metal Cohen, Frog Leap Studios, Jonathan Young, Our Last Night, doing a whole bunch of really, really cool stuff. So I think that's probably going to be the big topic for next week. Of course, with the usual follow-up from this week, and we'll be talking about those albums that we've recommended each other for next week. But this is the 9-8 Podcast. Thank you so much for listening again, as always. My name is David Ellis.
My name is Alex Hogg, and we will see you all next week.
See you then.
Adios.